what you'll have at the Crandon will be very similar to what you had here at Holden. You'll have tanks filled with water and chemicals, chemicals which create a soap action, a bubbling action, and the minerals will attach themselves to those bubbles, and they'll just keep continually scraping off those bubbles and form a concentrate that way, and eventually dry out that bubble concentrate, and then ship the concentrate off for smelting. This is similar to what they'll do here. The idea is to separate out the mineral-bearing stuff from the rest of the material. Very similar process. What's different about it is the size. Let's go back a few shots. This ore body is 55 million tons in size. Okay, the ore body here at Holden is 10 million tons in size. This is a very large massive sulfide ore body. Probably one of the 10 largest of its type in North America. So it's extremely large. Yeah, Carl?
When you cut big holes like that 150 by 20 foot in there, what keeps that from collapsing at some point? Because you have ore somewhere you want.
Okay. What keeps it from collapsing? Well, one, the rock itself is very competent. But you can't just let it sit there as openings. You eventually have to fill those openings up. All rock that's in the ground like this or in the mountain of Copper Mountain is under a stress. There are pressures or stresses being applied to that rock all the time. When you create openings in that rock, if it's competent, it'll withstand that pressure. But at some point in time, it may ultimately fail. Some rock is more competent than others, therefore it would fail less, have a tendency to fail less. But the point is that up here in the Holden mine, they did do filling of stopes that help get control of the ground, as they say, to fill some of the stopes back in so that it would not be collapsing on them. The Crandon mine, they will fill up every stope that's made below ground. Because it's against the law in Wisconsin to build a mine in which there will ever be surface subsidence. So you have to demonstrate that there will not be surface subsidence. The best way to do that is to fill the stopes back up. And so they'll put waste rock back in the ground, add some cementitious material to it, so it will harden essentially in place to maintain control of the ground. Go on. So this is another sketch of what it would look like from the air. The plant site here, the ore body shown here on this projection up to the surface, tailings management area off to the southeast a little bit. Here's the rail line that will take the concentrate out to the major railway. And then here's the access road for the workers coming to the plant site. Here are those lakes that we were talking about. What's outlined in black is the area that would actually be permitted under a mining permit in Wisconsin. So that whole area would be subject to the mine permit itself. In Wisconsin, it's not just a mine permit. Every other kind of permit that you might need, discharging water, one thing or another, those are also in addition to a mine permit. But the mine permit itself would cover that area.
It's kind of hard to tell from this.
What?
It kind of tells this distance. Is this kind of rolling or flat? Is it? Where's the surface?
Yeah, it's sort of gently rolling. This is glaciated terrain. This is not real hilly. These contours are probably 10 foot contour lines. Okay. And so this is fairly gently rolling terrain. Not mountainous at all.
The blue line, is that?
The blue line, I'm glad you pointed that out. The blue line here, this is Hemlock Creek.
Okay.
And then this is Swamp Creek. And I'll mention those again, and thanks for pointing those out. It was very important, Swamp Creek, Hemlock Creek, and then the lakes, Little Sand Lake, Deep Hole Lake, Duck Lake, Oak Lake, are also important to understanding the story of this proposal. Well, so what's the big deal? A 55 million ton ore body proposed to be developed by a large underground mine in rural northern Wisconsin. If you're a mining company, of course, this is exactly what you're looking for. You're looking for a large concentration of economic minerals in an area which you believe that you can mine that material and do so in an environmentally sound way. This is the lifeblood of mining, is to find mineral deposits, bring them into production, and make money off of that production. So this is exactly what a mining company is in business to do, is to find these things and then decide how they want to develop them and then try to get the permits to do that. A lot of environmental groups have a lot of concern about this particular proposal. They're concerned about the effect on groundwater. They're concerned about the effects on surface water. And I'll go through all these in just a minute. This is an area, I mentioned this is 5 miles south of the little city of Crandon. It's also about 3 miles east of the Mole Lake community, which is the Mole Lake band of the Chippewa. Mole Lake band of the Chippewa Nation. It's called the Sekalgan Chippewa. They're about 3 miles to the west of this particular site. This is terrain which they have historically claimed, although those claims have in subsequent court action not been upheld. But this is obviously very close to their reservation, to the land that they hold in the state of Wisconsin. Swamp Creek, which we pointed out a minute ago, flows into what's called the Wolf River. The Wolf River is an incredibly important river in Wisconsin. A lot of recreation associated with the Wolf River. But even more important than the recreation associated with it, if you go back up into Swamp Creek flows into what's called Rice Lake. Rice Lake is a source of rice for the Sekalgan Chippewa community. And of course, they're very concerned that this mine would in some way impact their ability to harvest rice in Rice Lake. If you're the state of Wisconsin, your concern is, geez, you know, we have rules, we have regulations, they're very, very stringent. This is not easy to get a mining permit in the state of Wisconsin. All we want to do is carry out the rules and the regulations and carry them out in the most appropriate way. Why all this controversy all the time? All we're trying to do is our particular job. If you're the local community of Crandon, for example, you're thinking, great, 400 to 500 permanent jobs in the area, just down the pike from us. Not all those jobs, and of course, not all those families will locate in Crandon, for heaven's sake. They'll locate in somewhat bigger towns like Rhinelander, to the west, and Antigo to the south, about 10, 15, 20 miles away. But a significant number will locate in Crandon. That area will boom economically, no question about it. Okay. So local units of government tend to be somewhat supportive of this. And there's an exception I'm going to get to in a minute. Let's talk about the issues that the project itself raises. I've divided them up into three areas: environmental protection, environmental track records, and socioeconomic impacts. I'm going to start first with environmental protection issues. If we look at the handling of mine waste, an ARD is acid rock drainage. One of the concerns with handling sulfidic materials like this is that if they're not handled properly, you create acidic drainage. If you get acidic drainage, that low pH leachate coming out of these mining wastes can pick up metals out of the other portions of the rock and can contaminate both surface water and groundwater if they're not handled properly. So there's a big issue associated with how will you handle the mining waste and prevent acidic rock drainage. I mentioned subsurface disposal milling waste. What comes out of the mill, half of that will go back into the mine to fill up those stopes. Now, there'll be something like on the order of 45, 46 million tons of waste associated with this project. So 22, 23 million tons of waste rock will go back underground and fill up those stopes. To control ground subsidence, also to control the tendency of the rock to want to fail to crush in because of the pressures that all rock is under in the Earth's crust. So they'll want to fill up those all those stores. About 22 million tons will be disposed of on the ground, on the ground surface, in what's called a tailings management area. So there's a lot of issues associated with that tailings management area. How will it be constructed? How will it be operated? How will it be monitored? So forth. It's important to understand what that tailings management area is. How will it operate? For how long will the stuff be there? Well, essentially, you'll have 22 million tons of acidic mine waste that is basically face powder-sized material. You'll have about 22 million tons of it on the ground surface forever.
Just like this stuff.
It won't go away. It won't deactivate itself. It'll be there essentially forever.
Like these tailings.
What?
Like these tailings. Yeah. Only this is only about 8 million tons.
Yeah. And so it's just try to keep the scale. We have about 80 acres that's covered by tailings here. Okay, we're talking about maybe 600 acres back with this project back in Wisconsin. So try to keep the scale in mind on these things. How will we fix this TMA if we need to fix it? The mining company will tell you that you cannot make any of these things absolutely leak-proof. They just simply are not leak-proof. You make them so that they leak as little as possible, but you cannot make them leak-proof. If you need to fix it, how will you do it? These are questions that are all part of the permitting process. These are questions all people are asking of the regulators as well. It'll be a similar process to what we saw here. When you operate a mill and you're separating out the metal bearing material, the waste rock is pumped out to this tailings management area in a slurry, something like this. Simply pumped out into a facility where it can be contained. This is an artist's conception of what it might look like, and basically this is just one part of it. The tailings management area will actually have four cells to it, and they'll be developed in sequence. You don't cut down 600 acres of trees, for example, all at once. You kind of do it in sequence so that you can do it in a little bit more controlled way. But this is what one of the cells would look like. It would have a little bit of a slope to it, and the reason is because you're going to be filling up from one side, so you want the material to basically move down towards the other side so you can get good distribution of the tailings. Also, you want to be able to keep it underwater. It's very important to keep a tailings underwater, because as long as it's underwater, then it's not available to oxygen. And if you have oxygen and water and sulfidic waste, you have the potential to create acidic rock drainage. You're going to essentially create sulfuric acid. Drops your pH, dissolves all the metals, and if it's bad enough, it can in fact breach your facility. So the whole point here is to manage this facility in a way which does not allow oxygen to reach this material. And so you keep it underwater. It's very interesting because when you move from one cell to the next, then let's say you're going to move from this cell down to this cell, what happens? Well, that cell becomes inactive. You no longer have tailings going into it. You no longer have it underwater. So there's a period of time in which that cell is exposed to the air and is drying out. One of the things that our Department of Natural Resources has asked the company to do is tell us now how much acidity can we expect from the time that you're going to have to let that be exposed to the air for two years while it dries out. You can't cap it while it's wet. You've got to let it dry out before you can cap it. And I'll get to that also in just a minute. But this is what it will look like in cross-sectional view. Now this is going to be about 90 feet high. They'll build embankments above the ground surface right now, and then they'll dig down into the ground part of the way. They'll dig down into the ground about 35, 40 feet into the ground, and embankments will be formed the rest of the way. One of the very important parts of the environmental program is to understand how this project might affect the groundwater system. And so it's very important that you understand where the groundwater is, where it's moving, so you've got to model it in some way. Now, I'm telling you that modeling a groundwater system is almost as much art as it is science. It's a very complicated science. It has to do with solving a whole bunch of mathematical equations at the same time. It's done with computer support and one thing or another. But there's also a fair amount of art associated with it as well, because these are complicated systems. We don't necessarily know everything about the groundwater system, although we try to know as much as we possibly can. In Wisconsin, we want the public to be involved in this whole process. But how can the public access what's going on with the groundwater system? How can they comment on the model that's developed for a groundwater system? That's why in Wisconsin, the environmental groups, in a sense, become the proxy for the public, because they have their own consultants, they do their own kind of modeling and get involved with the project in that way. So basically, the public doesn't know. The public decides who they want to trust on something like this and pick their sides, depending on how they want it to come on. Very important to understand the groundwater system, because in Wisconsin, it's illegal to put in a mine that will affect a private water supply. You're not allowed to disrupt a private water supply with a mining operation, unless you buy the well or replace all the water for the person. It's also important because groundwater systems are tied to surface water bodies as well as to wetlands and to the habitats that wetlands support. This is just a quickie example. This is a printout of what they've done here is to model the groundwater after a particular period of time. And what they've done is, because your mine begins to act like a big well, is what it does, because water will come into the mine, so you keep pumping that water out of the mine, and so the mine begins to act as a big well, and it begins to create a drawdown effect in the groundwater system around the mine. And so these lines are equal points of expected drawdown or lowering of the water table. You can see this far out, it's a 1 foot, lowering the water table only about 1 foot. When you get on top of the mine, it's lowering the water table by a little over 20 feet or so. And this is just a printout from one of the computer runs that's done when you do this kind of computer kind of modeling of groundwater. You do this so you can get a handle on a couple of things. What's going to be the effect on surface streams? What's going to be the effect on lakes? How much extra water are we going to have to handle in this system? So you got to get an idea of how much water is going to be produced in that mine. It's important to know that, because your groundwater system is connected to surface water bodies, as I mentioned before, lakes or wetlands, and also connected to streams like Hemlock Creek or Swamp Creek in the area. And what is the nature of that connection? What will be the impact on those surface water bodies if you allow this water level to be drawn down by the mining company when they operate the mine?
Mine would operate for what, 30, 50?
20? It'll operate for somewhere on the order between 25 and 30 years. Okay. If it were to get its permits. It will be mining at the rate of about 5,500 tons a day. And I compare that to, say, something like here, which is around 2,000 tons per day, give you, again, a concept of scale. The modeling that we've done so far shows definitely that there will be excess water. Wisconsin is water rich, so there will be excess water produced. And so it's important to understand how much water is going to be produced, because ultimately you've got to get rid of that extra water. You've got to treat it and discharge it someplace. So it's important to understand what the nature of that discharge is going to be, how much you're going to have to discharge. And there's an issue that's created here because of what the mining company has proposed to do with this particular mine, and that's the interbasin transfer of the water resource itself. And I'll try to come back to that in just a minute. So your discharge has to be treated, and this is a water treatment plant with another mine in Wisconsin, sized to be able to handle 800 gallons per minute. The discharge from the Crandon mine will probably not exceed 800 gallons per minute. So this is probably about the size of the water treatment plant that you'd have to have. But now think about discharging 800 gallons of water per minute. And start multiplying that out, and you see that you rapidly go in excess of 1 million gallons per day. Right? It's a very large volume of water in terms of its absolute number. What they're proposing to do at Crandon is to build a 38-mile pipeline that will go up the access road, up along Highway 8, all the way over to Rhinelander, down this county road, down to Highway 17, and over this county road, and discharge it into the Wisconsin River. Why in God's name are they building a 38-mile pipeline? The reason they're doing this is because if you're going to be discharging 1 million gallons of water a day, you got to be careful where you're going to be doing that. The river systems in the immediate area of the mine tie into the Wolf River, which is a highly protected surface water body. It's very important to the Native American communities. It's very important to all the recreational development in the area. It has a very high level of protection. Okay, you cannot discharge into it very easily. And so the mining company, to avoid that, is proposing to pipe treated water, which is essentially almost drinking water quality, all the way over 38 miles over to the Wisconsin River. Wisconsin River is considered more of a working river. It has paper mills on it, and the water quality is not as good as it is in the Wolf River. And so the company doesn't have to treat the water to quite as high a level, a degree of purity, as it would have to if it were ever to propose discharging it into the Wolf River. So it's going to go over into the Wisconsin River. Now, the discharge into a river cannot be done in such a way that it harms the river, but ultimately there could be an impact, and that's what has to be evaluated.
Is there a seasonal aspect to this as far as how easy it is to discharge at a certain time of year?
No. This will be beyond any kind of seasonal impacts at all, because they're producing the water from underground, so that's not going to be a matter of being interrupted by winter conditions.
I was thinking of the dilution you would get in the surface water.
Now these streams, okay. This stream will be open all year round, okay. And there'll be no difference in that. When you're done, 25 to 30 years later, having done this at 5,500 tons per day for 25 to 30 years, and you're finished, you have to reclaim the site. So your tailings management area at the top, for example, will have to be capped, because you'll have to be able to make sure that water kind of flows off the sides of that tailings management area. You don't want water coming down into those tailings ad infinitum. You want to kind of stop the flow of water into them. So you'll cap the whole thing. You will seed everything on the site. All the buildings will be torn down. The tailings management area itself will be reseeded. Hopefully you'll get this kind of response, but notice one thing is missing. There are no trees. I mean, you will not redevelop trees on your tailings management area, because the last thing you want is to develop something which is going to root deeply into your cap that you've just built on top of that tailings management area. So this will be changed, but the vegetation will be changed. This is an artist's conception of something of what it would look like after it is reclaimed. And the green that you see in the right and then over where the plant is, basically those are treeless terrains. Now over where the plant is, they'll be able to begin to put trees back into that site, but they'll never be able to put the trees back on the TMA itself.
For as long as the mining company owns that land, I suppose they have a responsibility for keeping trees and penetrating the cap, but once the land changes hands, how does that work into management of the site?
Well, the mining company under Wisconsin law is perpetually responsible for the environmental integrity of the site. They cannot sell that liability to anybody else. It is a liability that goes with the mining company. So once they operate a metal mine in Wisconsin, they are always responsible for the site. So they'll retain that. One of the big areas of concern besides environmental issues is we've been talking about socioeconomic impacts. When you bring in, and they'll bring in something like 800 workers when they're constructing the mine. And that'll be for about a 2-year period, and then eventually when they are operating the mine, they'll be settled down to about 500 to 600 new workers. So there's concern about what will be the impact when you bring in all those workers for construction, and then also the significant number that will stay. A lot of issues that continue to go on. It creates a lot of jobs in an area that needs jobs very badly. But those jobs and those people create impacts on the services that need to be provided to them, housing availability, schools, etc. There's a lot of talk about the boom-bust economy that seems to characterize a lot of mining development. This is a mixed bag as far as I'm concerned a little bit here, because there is a certain boom-bust nature to mining. But in Wisconsin, we've developed some techniques to try to minimize that by providing money to local units of government to help them through those kinds of times when there might be a down cycle in a mining company. We don't have time to go into all of those kind of things, but the state is aware of this aspect of it. And of course, once a mining company is there, eventually it goes away. I mean, eventually the materials are finished, as they were here at Holden, where in a combination not only of having to mine a deeper ore here, but also the loss of some of their tax breaks, higher labor costs here, and the need to refurbish this facility here after 20 years of operation, all of those combined eventually to lead to the decision to leave the Holden mine and stop mining. Those kinds of decisions, of course, you know, would face any kind of mining operation. And so it's important. A lot of people are very concerned about the socioeconomic impact of something of this nature in a location such as we're talking about. Another major area of concern is the environmental track record of the parties involved. Crandon Mining Company is a 50-50 partnership between Exxon USA and Rio Algom. Rio Algom is a Canadian mining company, a large Canadian mining company that's operated a number of mines, including uranium mines in the Elliott Lake, Ontario area. They've been around a long time, a major player. Exxon, of course, is one of the largest multinational corporations, has had a variety of mining operations over the years, of which people have raised questions about. It's impossible to talk about Exxon without somebody raising the question about the Exxon Valdez. Even though it has nothing to do with mining, it is a terrible accident which happened, to which Exxon's name is inexorably attached. It's attached simply because of the name of the boat for no other reason. But obviously Exxon was responsible for that environmental travesty. So there's a lot of concern about who these players are. Who are these companies? What is their commitment to doing this right? And how should we deal with that as a state of Wisconsin? And we can talk about that if that's of interest to you. Ultimately, the decision on Crandon, the mining proposal, will be a legal decision. Our process is very specific. It's a very rigid process. It provides for public input at various points, but ultimately it comes down to what is basically a trial in which parties that are involved, the mining company will be one of the parties, various environmental groups will be parties, to what will essentially be a trial in front of an administrative law judge. People will be sworn in and they'll give testimony, they'll be subject to cross-examination, there'll be motions filed, there'll be decisions by the judge, a decision will be rendered at some point in time on all the permits, and it's probably about 15 to 20 different permits that will be necessary in order for this mine to go forward. The mining permit is only one of them. But it's extremely controversial. And it is to that controversy that I wanted to sort of turn attention to now. Maybe you could just switch that off and just put that button back. Yeah, thanks, Gabe. Let me ask a question. I've given you an idea of what the mine will look like, some of the issues are that are involved with the mine. Is there any opportunity, given the nature of the operation, the parties that are involved, is there any opportunity to find any kind of sense of community in reaching this decision? Is there a chance for this to be a win-win decision, or does it, by its very nature, have to be a win-lose decision? Or is it, in your opinion, a lose-lose decision? No matter how you do this, you lose. But I would imagine the issue here is this a win-lose solution? I mean, decision? I mean, is there any way that the parties involved that everybody can win in this sense? Is there any community in the sense of this controversy at all? What do you think?
Well, how does the leadership in Crandon feel about bringing autonomy to their region?
Okay, good question, and it reminds me to tell you a little story. In the state of Wisconsin, you must have approval from local government in order to be able to mine. It's not just a state decision. So there are four units of government: the county government, two different town governments, and then one city government, which have some kind of regulatory responsibility for the area involved in. A county, two towns, and one city. The ore body, by the way, happens to straddle two townships. Interestingly enough, so you get two towns involved. All right, those four units of government have to approve this project. Two of those units of government have already done that by signing what are called local agreements. Our law was changed in the late 80s to allow local units of government to talk to a mining company ahead of time, before it had all the state permits, and to agree on any kind of zoning issues that the local units of government might have. Basically, it's a zoning decision. All right, so two of the units of government have agreed to grant the mining company its zoning approvals already. Environmental impact statement has not yet been written on the project, but the company has been here a long time educating people about the project. So it's not as if the local units of government know nothing about this. They know quite a bit about it. But two of the governments have already agreed that if they can get their state permits, they'll get their local permits. Okay, one of those units of government is the town of Nashville. Now, a township in Wisconsin, typically the town board is three members. All three of those members, the three town board members, the town clerk, the town treasurer, were all voted out of office as a consequence of their agreeing to this local agreement last year. People were so incensed that they would do that they voted them out of office. They formulated a campaign and threw them all out. New board, new clerk, new town treasurer. Okay. Problem is that they have the local agreement is a legal document already signed by the then legally constituted town board and cannot be rescinded. Okay. So when you ask how do the town leaders feel about it, depends on when we're talking about. Clearly, the town leaders that have been there for years and years and years, and the ones who work with the mining company fairly closely, wanted to see the project come through, signed the local agreement, but it cost them their positions in the next election. Because the townspeople, a majority of the voting townspeople, voted for people who were against the mine and basically threw those people out of office.
Did it lack publicity?
Is it what?
Did it lack publicity?
Well, did what lack? It had incredible publicity in the area. It was tremendous. It was what was on everybody's mind in those elections.
But how about before the signing of the local agreement? Was there any publicity?
Well, it's an issue in this way. You cannot sign a local agreement unless you've had a public hearing. You must agree or vote on a local agreement only in a public meeting. You can't do it in private. You can negotiate, however, a local agreement any way you want. But you can't sign it in private, and you can't adopt it until you've had at least one public hearing. People knew about the agreement. It was common knowledge. The agreement was out there on the table for everybody to read ahead of time, because they're going to have the public hearings on it and do the voting. What you'll find in these issues is that the anti-mining groups will be very vocal, very well organized, and they will come to the meetings angry, very, very angry. And they will try to dominate the meetings. The town board, these are town boards now, remember, that the most pressing issue they normally deal with is fixing a town road. That's usually the most pressing issue they've got in front of them. And now all of a sudden, you've got a multinational corporation telling you you have the opportunity for several hundred jobs, incredible tax base increase, the ability to think about those and be able to think, oh man, we can almost eliminate property taxes in our town because the mining company is going to be providing that kind of input. And you can negotiate. You can say to the mining company, okay, well, if we agree to this zoning, we want you to build us a new jail, or we want you to build us a new school, or whatever it is you can negotiate that the mining company will agree to. And there were elements of that kind of negotiation also as a part of the local agreement. So the answer to your question is the local leaders were fully in support of the mining operation, but the citizens of the town, or the majority of the voting citizens, were not. Where's a community in that kind of a situation?
And that's only one of the four jurisdictions. What about the other? You said only two have.
The county, has approved it, and in the last election, there was no serious challenge to any of the county board members over this issue. The town Nashville board was completely overturned. The town of Lincoln has yet to vote on it, unless they voted on it since I've been out here. And the city of Crandon will probably approve it, from all intents and purposes that I can tell. So the big question is whether the town of Lincoln will do it or not. There's a lot of incentive to do it, because you can go to a company and say, I want a new school, I want a new, jail. I mean, you have incredible negotiating position if you're a local unit of government in this situation. And the town of Nashville played that card. I mean, I forget exactly what they got, but they got basically a new jail built, $5 million, some other $5 million facility, and one thing or another that the company will build. Basically, it's done through a loan. They give a loan to the local unit of government, and then the local unit of government starts to pay that back, and then after 10 years, the rest of it's just forgiven. It's an interest-free loan, so. The games, these are games that you can play, but they're not illegal games. They're kind of games you would play in negotiating. The mining company needs zoning approval. It cannot operate without it. The local unit of government may want something in return for that. And under our laws, they're allowed to negotiate that, negotiate it down and dirty. Any other questions or comments? Think about the issue of community in this thing. Is there community here at all?
Where's the Native community in this? What's their position?
The what?
The Native community.
The Native American community is absolutely 100% opposed to the mine.
They're not in any of the jurisdictions.
But they have no authority over the mine. They're not in the position. I mean, we would never even be here, of course, if this was on Native American land. They simply would never entertain the idea of doing it. And interestingly enough, the Mole Lake Reservation is sitting on top of a small mineral deposit of some size, actually. I mean, it's supposedly a $1 billion mineral deposit, but they have no interest in developing it. But that they have been opposed to the project from its beginning, but they have no authority.
But if that 800 gallons a minute draining their surface water, draining their watershed, basically, right, could dry up the whole thing.
Well, the 800 gallons per minute sounds enormous. Roughly a million gallons a day sounds enormous. But when you start putting it into the context of what else is going on in Wisconsin, you'll find out that it maybe is not really all that much. For example, into the Wisconsin River, into which they will discharge that million gallons per day, that's probably less than 1% of the low flow of the Wisconsin River. It's a very small percentage of that flow. What impact would that have? And remember now, this is treated water. I mean, some of the anti-mining groups call this a sewer line.
No,
but basically it's treated water.
Taking it out of the source, not where it's going into. But
right. That interbasin transfer issue has been raised because under Wisconsin law, it's a non-issue because it's not big enough. A million gallons a day is not big enough to trigger the decision that the state of Wisconsin would have to make under the existing law structure. You have to have 2 million gallons a day doing it, and then you decide whether you want to make a decision or not. And if it's 5 million gallons a day, then you have to make a decision. However, there is another law that's involved here because you're taking it out of the Wolf River Basin, which flows into Lake Michigan. That's one of the Great Lakes, and there are some Great Lake Commissioners' decisions which may, in fact, be involved in this, where you might ultimately, theoretically, have to go get permission from the governor of Michigan, the governor of Minnesota, the provincial governor, government of Ontario. Okay. Yeah. I mean, which would be a horrendous hurdle.
Because it drains into the Mississippi.
Right. And the mining company believes that it does not have to do that, and they, you know, they're developing the legal case for that. A decision on whether they have to do it or not has not been made. Yeah, Gay?
Why couldn't they recycle it instead of discharge it? If they have to pull that much out and it's purified, why don't they just reuse it instead of...
The water.
Yeah, the water instead of getting rid of it.
They do. They reuse as much as they can reuse, and they still have 600 to 800 gallons per minute that they've got to treat and discharge. So they reuse as much as they can. Wisconsin is water rich.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, the issue there is not losing water. You've just got too much water. And you've got this huge mine sitting underground, and what you've got is a huge well. So you've got water pumping that stuff out. Anything that touches the rock has got to be treated. And it just, the quantities are just enormous.
When I read the signs here at Holden, they talk about the incredible noise associated with the mine. Is that an issue?
No, it doesn't seem to be. They do an assessment of that. They do an assessment of noise. They have to do that as part of our laws. And because the mine itself is underground, you have just a mill up on top, it does not appear to be much of an issue. Now, if you're on the other side of Hemlock Creek, there are some second residential development along Hemlock Creek on the other side of Hemlock Creek. And there is an issue for some of those people, but it does not appear to be a noise level which is going to demand a permit or anything. It's, they'll be able to hear some things, but not going to be very loud.
You talked about the percentage of the discharge into the Wisconsin River. What about the percentage of the flow of Hemlock Creek?
I did a calculation. If you assume that 800 gallons per minute is what you're going to be withdrawing totally from Swamp Creek, so that's a worst case scenario, right. It's about 4 or 5% of the low flow of Swamp Creek. Is that enough to harm the creek?
Yeah.
Probably not, because it's probably not all coming from Swamp Creek in the first place anyway.
But if you lower the ground level, the groundwater table, you could in a sense send that subterranean or drain the lake or.
Well, and of course that's what they've got to model is whether or not if they were to do that, if they lower that water level, will you then decrease the normal groundwater inflow in the Swamp Creek such that you reduce it even further than this 4 or 5% I'm talking about? And that's something that they'll have to model that out. You're not allowed to harm a surface water body in Wisconsin as a result of mining, because surface water bodies are owned by the public. And if you harm a surface water body, what you've done is convert a public body into a private body by doing it. And you created it, you changed it into a private purpose. And you can't do that in Wisconsin, okay?
Well, you talked about the community. Is it majorly an old community where you don't have a lot of young people, that the young people are leaving because of lack of jobs in that area?
Absolutely, there are no jobs for them.
So if by building the mine, you're going to keep the young people or draw young people in, that could be very good for the community. And if it's an old community, you sometimes get the status quo sort of thing that my town has always been this way, I don't want it to change, even though we're losing all the young people in it.
Yeah, okay, here's one problem with that though. What training will these young people have in underground mining? It's a very highly skilled activity. If I were a mining company, one of the things I would be peddling harder than they are peddling is training opportunities for local people. I mean, I think about these things. How would I pitch this thing if I were doing it? And boy, that's one of the things, Gay, that I would really pitch is education and training for jobs in the area. Now, what they've said is in the local agreement, they will guarantee the maximum. They will give local people preference for jobs, but that they're not committing themselves to a number. In this other mine I mentioned over here in Ladysmith, a small mine that operated in recent years, they guaranteed 70% of the employment would be from local area. And they were able to meet that. Yes, but that was an open pit mine, much different.
That's how we overcame in Portland when the Trailblazers built their new building for playing basketball. That's one of the ways we overcame the opposition, was by guaranteeing that 30% of the people hired would not only be hired out of this area that is somewhat downtrodden, we would train them as well. Yeah. And that upgraded that neighborhood, and so they were very much. It gave them a very solid support.
It was one of the surprises in the local agreement that was adopted to the town of Nashville that there was not tougher language about that in the agreement, but it wasn't there. So.